Item 19, discussion of possible action on Lake Granbury Canal Engineering Study by Kent Lundy.
Mr. Chairman, Board, again, as you recall, this last April, we had numerous concerns, certainly over the past, with the canal assessment and structures within the lake at Granbury. Presently, what we had, and certainly a concern for any future canals that might be put into that lake, we brought Brown and Gay representatives forward to discuss an engineering project that we were looking at to come up with some type of science, if there could be any way for not only the feasibility of canals, but the way that you structure those. You had approved us to move forward with the first phase of that with Brown and Gay. We're trying to do that in concert with the city because their concern in looking at us is that we're slowing down economic development around there as much as a concern as we have, and I would hope that they have with any type of canals that would in the future go into the lake. The 5th of August was actually the 120-day time frame for this Phase 1 report. Brown and Gay has been able to pretty much finish that at this time, so we didn't have to wait till after this board by October to bring this first phase forward. So what I want to do is have them come forward, and I'll introduce them to go over what they found in Phase 1, review that briefly. They've got some pictures as well to go through on the lake to show you. And once that's completed, then I'll come forward for an approval to move forward with Phase 2 of this venture that will really get into designing the specs and that. So at this time, I'd like to ask Dorian French, who is the lead engineer with the project, and then Melinda Silva, if they would, to come forward, and they'll review status of Phase 1 with you.
Hello, everybody. Thanks for having us here today. I'm going to start off, and then Dorian will be following me. As Kent told you, this is a three-phase project, and we've just completed Phase 1. We're actually going to submit the written report Friday this week, but we're going to go through some of our findings with you today and then move forward in Phase 2, hopefully, to actually come up with the details of the recommendations. Next slide. This is the calendar that was shown to you initially. Next slide. Next slide, please. Okay, thank you. Basically, initially, we were going to just find out what kind of information is out there about the canals. We did some research with the city and the county. There's a lack of design information available. The city and county doesn't keep detailed design drawings on the canals. The plats have very little information about the canals other than showing where a canal is. We did some national research, a literature search on what kind of guidelines people have out there about canals, how other people manage them. And you know, this is kind of a new field. There's not a lot of information publicly available about canals on lakes. There's a lot of guidelines that have been put forward by the Corps of Engineers and others regarding canals on harbors off the ocean. But on the lakes, there's limited information. So we wanted to let you know that you're kind of on the forefront there of developing guidelines. Next slide, please. There's some regulations and permitting guidelines that are applicable here. There's Corps of Engineer permits. Part of those permits, there's certain triggers depending on how much dredging is being done, how much of an impact to a shoreline is being impacted, that triggers certain permits with the Corps. Part of the Corps' permit involves getting a TCEQ water quality permit, and there's various levels there, but typically you would have a Tier 1 permit, which basically gives you a list of best management practices. And as a contractor, you would agree that you would abide by some of those best management practices as you proceeded with your development. And some of those things could be the installation of silt fences, other things like that. They are not specific to the particular project that's involved. So I think that's important to know. Go ahead. I'm reading this from the side, so it's a little askew. We went out into the field a couple times and took a look at what we could see out there about the canals while we were out there. We took a lot of photos. We took some measurements while we were out there, dissolved oxygen, temperature, other things. We looked at the geometry, the layout of the canals, how wide they were. We tried to understand how the docks were affiliated, if they were congested. We also looked at the bulkheads, any vegetation, erosion. Thank you very much. And of course, we looked at the setbacks for the lots, the density of the developments. Next slide, please. Here's a map of the whole study area that we looked at. The city limits are shown up here in yellow, but it's a large lake, and we spent a lot of time in these canals. Next slide. You know, I'm using the term canal kind of loosely, because if you look at a map, you'll see that there's some canals that are clearly man-made because they are regular, and you see that they have squared edges, like the T-shaped one that you're looking at, but there's also some that seem to be natural drainages. But then you have a mix on Lake Granbury where you have some where it's a natural drainage, but it looks like it's been improved somehow because perhaps there's some regular sections that have come off of it. So when we're talking canals, we're talking about all these things. A lot of these issues are across all of these things. So I wanted to explain the way I'm using that term. Next slide, please. Here's in red, you'll see these are all the canals that we actually spent time in. There's not that many on the upper end, on the northern end of the lake. But next slide. As you move down, we spent a lot of time in these. And you can see, if you look at some of these, you can see just south of the H-shaped canal, I'll use that term since you can spot that there in the middle of the screen, but you'll see what looks to be a natural drainage that has some channels off of it that appear to be improved. So that goes back to what I was explaining earlier. Some of these things, it's difficult to tell if they are man-made. And remember, there aren't any engineering drawings that are available, so I can't go back to some drawings and look at what the original landscape was and what changes were made. So really, you have to make, you base everything on what you can see, what's above the water level. Next slide, please. Here's just a feel for some of the canals, you know, that I assume y'all have been out there yourselves, and there's a lot of boat docks. Moving on. Here's some pictures. Maybe you haven't seen these. It's kind of hard to get a feel for the water quality from some photos. Just looking at these, you can kind of see the color of the water here. It's green. There's a lot of algae. It's very still. There's not any circulation. If you're out there, sometimes there's smell, and it just is, it doesn't come across in the photos. You can see there's debris floating on top of the water. A lot of this water is very shallow, so there's a lot of areas that has poor water quality. I think many of you realize this. Moving forward. Now, I wanted to tell you, we spent a lot of time in the field. We took a lot of photos. We collected a lot of data, and all that information was organized in a GIS database. So what we did is we actually took a map. We identified each canal, assigned that canal an ID number, and then all the photos were tied directly to that specific canal. The measurements that we took were tied to that canal. We just thought this was a good way to organize the information. I think it'll be useful for BRA. It helped us analyze the data a little bit better as we move forward. Next slide. I want to talk to you a little bit about the canal geometry. What you have out there is you have a lot of dead-end canals, which means a single entrance. It's a narrow entrance. They're oriented in all different manners. They're not necessarily oriented to take advantage of the prevailing winds. The width varies, but there's a lot of instances where you just really have a 20-foot clear area for boat traffic, and you have boat docks on either side. The depth of the canals vary. You have what looks to be vertical walls on each side. Bulkheads come straight up, and then you go into people's homes. and they're long links and angular. And then what's really desired, if you look at some of the guidelines that are out there by the Corps of Engineers, they suggest looped canals with multiple entrances that are flared at least twice what the normal width of the canal is, that are aligned with the prevailing winds so that you can take advantage of the circulation of the winds, at least a 50-foot minimum clearance, more is better. They suggest a maximum of a 6-foot depth in a canal, and that's to encourage mixing, and they suggest that that depth in the canal be no deeper than the main lake just outside of the canal, and decreasing as you go back into the canal. They suggest also sloping walls to the canals, a 3-to-1 setback, and short links. The canal should not go up into the land a long length. They should be wide, short, and they should curve around with multiple entrances. So now a lot of these guidelines are, in a perfect world, what you would like to have, and we understand that there'll have to be compromises, but I just wanted to show you the difference between what you have on Lake Granbury and what would be desired if you could do it perfectly. So as we move forward, yes, sir.
On your maximum depth of 6 feet, you said that was to increase mixing?
Yes, that's for the water quality.
And immediately outside the canal, the water is greatly in excess of 6 feet.
I'm sorry, it's not always in excess.
Let's say it is.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say you got 16 or 20 foot water, and then you enter the canal, but you only cut the canal 6 foot, goes in.
Yeah.
My question is, what principle causes the mixing?
Because it's more shallow, it keeps the water quality better because the water can mix.
Is it convection?
Yes.
What principle
yes.
governs the mixing?
Well, the deeper the water is, the more of a temperature variation you have from the bottom of the water to the top of the water. So the
I'm saying that in the case of the shallow, that you would get the very hot water in the canal, cooler water in the deeper water.
Yes.
And this cooler water would sink, so you would have less mixing. That's what's bothering.
Oh, I see what you're saying. I guess what I'm trying to say is that you need to avoid where you have, say the water in the main lake is only 5 feet, then you go into a canal that's deeper.
Well, I understand.
And then come back up.
I was wondering why the max is 6 feet, because it looks like it defeats the purpose if you have deeper water.
If you have deeper water in front. Well, I guess to say simply at this time, I would just say for the water quality, in general, 6 foot is maximum is what they suggest. There's certainly instances where that may not be the case. So does that answer your question? All right, moving on. Okay, this is a detail of some of the canal geometry, so you can see there's only one canal that's on Lake Granbury that actually has a flow-through canal. Right here is the only one. The rest of them, you see there's one entrance, it's narrow, it goes straight back. Here's an example of what I was talking about earlier, where you have a natural that looks like it's been improved. This may have been original, and this has been added by man. Here, where you come straight in and then you turn sharply, this is a bad layout just because this inhibits the mixing of the water, making that sharp turn. Can we move on, please? Next slide. All right, while we were out there, we also took a look at the bulkheads. There's really no design standards, the city or the county, nobody really has any ordinances that deal with bulkheads. So there's a wide variety out there. There's a lot of them that it looks like that each homeowner did their own thing when they bought their property. Some of the newer properties, Catalina Bay and Water's Edge, it looks like the developer did all the bulkheads when they started the development, and they're uniform. there's mixed success out there. Here's an example in this photo of one that you can see. This is just a freestanding wall. It's not tied into anything. That's going to fall over. You know, I think if you kicked it, it would fall over. There's a lot of walls like that that aren't tied in, and these basically, where they're collapsing, that just causes problems for the canal and the homeowner. Some HOAs out there do have some guidelines. There's health and safety concerns, like I said, as far as the walls falling down. And I did want to mention that at PK, I guess the new shoreline management plan does address bulkheads there, but at Granbury, you don't have anything in place. Moving forward. Here's some more failures. You can see that there's a wide variety here. This is just wide open here because there's the soil is washed out behind it. That's going to collapse at any point. Here is another example where the soil is washed out. Here used to be slab concrete that has fallen in, and this is basically just left that way. You know, you have a problem here where they had a timber bulkhead. It's collapsed into the water. Moving on. There's also some other issues, even people that don't have bulkheads. You'll see over here, this person may have mowed all the way to the water. So any fertilizers or anything else they put on the yard is going straight into the water. So that's generally not a good idea. If you don't put any bulkheads at all, you have like this where you can see kind of erosion that's going to go on here, and that's just going to get worse and worse. That sediment's going to fall into that canal and decrease the depth of that canal moving forward. You do have some examples of good bulkhead designs that are out there. It's not all bad news. This person, you see it's sloped back, and they do have it terraced. That's done nicely. Here's a timber bulkhead that seems sturdy. It's staying in place. You have a lot of people that have done something like this where they have stair-stepped the wall back. And then here's a new development where they've used the sheet piling bulkheads. So I would say that there's things that work out there, and you can probably have some wide parameters to give people to work within, but they do need some parameters. There's also some canal insets out there. I just wanted to point out, when you have a situation like this, this homeowner has blocked off that inset. The water quality in here, you can just imagine, because there's bad circulation in the canal to begin with. And then when someone blocks off the water, you know, that makes it even worse. A lot of them collect debris, like this one has. Now this homeowner, he's got a pretty good design, because you see how it's wider here at the entrance, so that, you know, the water can get in there and circulate a little bit. There's no wind at all in this picture, you'll notice, but at least this one is sturdy and open. This one's also not so bad. There's no debris in there. Moving on. I wanted to show you this. This was kind of shocking when we went out there in one canal and we saw this retaining wall in the back. If you approach just through this wall of concrete, it just looks like someone has shot the whole three of the back sides there with gunite, like you would do a swimming pool. It doesn't appear to be designed by a licensed engineer. I think someone just thought this would be a good idea. But right here, I don't know if you can tell in the photo, but those are water stains. There's water that is leaching through this wall. The water is pouring through the wall and coming around the side. That tells me that wasn't designed well. It makes me a little worried about the security and safety of that wall. Here's the other side. You can see how high that wall is, and then on this side they've put stone up there. I just wanted to point out that homeowners out there are doing things that could endanger other people that are in canals. Someone was back here. Moving on. We were talking about erosion earlier. If you don't have any bulkheads in place, here's a good example. I wanted to show you this. This is a canal system, and You can see the parcels right there. There's lots on this side, a road, and lots on that side. Next slide. Okay, now here's the aerial photo, the latest aerial photo we got from you. You can see all of this is gone because of erosion. And you have problems over here. Now, it's not exactly lined up because the parcel data is a little bit off, but it gives you an idea of how much of an erosion problem you can have if you don't have any bulkheads out there. Moving forward. I wanted to mention Bodocs just briefly to let you understand that there's a huge amount out there. There's about 6,600 Bodocs. That's a lot. And when you have a lot of them on a canal, when you have a very dense neighborhood and everybody has a large boat dock, you can imagine how congested that is and how that could inhibit the mixing of the water. There are some issues with a lot of these boat docks that are abandoned. This, for instance, right here, that is the ground. It has gotten so shallow that this whole backside of this canal, which is boat dock, can't be used because it's so shallow there. So someone just abandoned those. I understand it's as expensive to remove a boat dock as to install one. So that's why people just generally walk away. But that causes problems for the canal. Moving forward. Here's another structure that is just left there. There's boats and see how green this water is. Moving forward. Okay, there's a lot of drainage, stormwater drainage that comes into the canal systems. And on one level, that's a very good thing because the water comes in the upstream side of that canal and it kind of flushes through and mixes the water. So that's a good thing. But the fact that the street drainage and the other drainage is piped directly into the canals, that means there's no time for any sediment or anything that's in that water to settle out. There's no retention. You also have yards that are sloped very steeply to the canals, and you get back to those residues of fertilizers coming into the canals, the grass that I showed you before mowed to the edge, and there's no natural buffer there to filter anything that might be in the water. Next slide, please. So you can see here in several canal developments, here's the street drainage, comes right off the street, and we cannot look at how nasty this water is right here. This concrete pipe. There's some solutions there where if the water was running through a grass line channel, that would be an improvement than a concrete pipe. There's a lot of things that we'll look at in phase two that could improve the water quality coming into the canal. Next slide. You can see the sediment that's built up here right in front of the pipe. This is pretty common. Next slide, please. Okay, there's also the wastewater system issues. We talked about regional versus septic systems. You know, the city has some guidelines. We need to look at the county ordinances to try to get people on a regional or package plan as much as possible. Look at the development density, the building setbacks, and the slope of the lots to the canal. So if people do have septic systems, you know, you don't have any of that bacteria leaching into your canal. Here's a map that was put together. I think some of you might have seen this from the Watershed Protection Plan about the different developments that have bacteria problems. You see, here's the darker color are the worst ones. In these darker areas, that's where you have the highest risk of bacteria leaching into the canals. Next slide. Here's another slide I wanted to put out just for interest. If you look at the orange areas, you can see if the BRA was to utilize the easement, the flowage easement that they have, those areas would be underwater. So there are a lot of areas that are adjacent to the lake, as you probably know all too well recently. The maintenance issues in the canals, a lot of people just use them to dump trash, you can see. And I guess the question you ask us to answer is, are additional canal developments feasible? And I think we can say that yes, they are, but they need to be regulated. There needs to be some guidelines. And I think with those technical standards, you know, development can continue. You're going to have to look at changing the geometry of the canals. You're going to have to look at possible mechanical mixing options for the water to increase the water, to improve the water quality, look at the wastewater treatment and the stormwater management to be able to allow the canal developments to continue. And, you know, the details of all of this are going to be put together in phase two, but I think Dorian's going to talk to you a little bit about some things that might be options in the next phase.
I guess to summarize and describe a few of the options that are available to us, and only options, there's a simple mechanical aeration means, solar powered, that kind of thing. Next slide. Other options, next slide. Okay. Next. They can provide canals with circulation. Next. Or there's U-tube aeration, which is a real simple mechanism for increasing the oxygen concentration along canals. It's used very extensively. Next. And if you can, encourage people to put water features. It helps a little bit. If a little bit helps, so it should be encouraged. Next. Next. You're already doing a lot of that. I guess in the final, our next phase, we're going to be looking at all these range of possible solutions. As Melinda's pointed out, the biggest thing we found is geometry, improving geometry. Obviously, we want to steer away from mechanical solutions if we can. Retaining wall standards, we'll be looking at making recommendations on that, wastewater treatment, and stormwater management next. And then the format of the guide documents that we'll be presenting you will be outlined, as well as the roles of the various agencies and the process for implementing the recommendations. And that'll come in the next two phases. That's it.
So I've got a question for you. The there were some pretty nasty pictures in there. I know that this is one of those politically motivated subjects that we're dealing with here. Since we seem to be in partnerships with the city of Granbury to help them with their future growth and financial wherewithal, can we also be in partnerships with them in regards to going back and requiring, you know, whether it's a period of 5 years or 10 years, upgrades to certain facilities, sort of like what we did with the hit PK with the encapsulated foam, bring everybody, all the existing canals into some sort of standard by a certain date?
We can do anything, but it's like we've been getting, Mike and the rest of us been getting beat up. It says, okay, it's your problem that you've had all this rain and all this debris is there. When's the BRA going to get it out? So we're going to have to do a study, and I'm not sure, I haven't seen the numbers yet, but it's quite extensive. The only way you can get rid of that stuff is to take a barge and physically go down there and pay somebody by the hour to kind of, you know, manually get it out of there.
But if it's inside a canal, why can we not make the city and or the county and or whoever is pushing us to develop a standard for future canals to help us go back and fix?
Well, that, I have a question to expand on that, and I don't know if it's for you or the engineer. What do they even have ordinances in place to? Okay, so that's part of the problem. Yeah. Right. There's nothing in place. So,
also, the majority of what you showed is outside the city limits of Granbury.
One thing that has been discussed is coordinating with the city and the county, more so the city because they have better ordinance making ability, but to see whether or not they will partner with us and put some requirements in place. And they have at least, I think, Ken, if I'm not incorrect, suggested that they're willing to team up with us. In addition, we want to talk to the county because they do have the ability to control subdivisions and regulate subdivision platting. So what we're hoping is through this process, we can get some assistance from those local governing entities.
Chris, correct me if I'm wrong, but you've got the city of Granbury, a very small area here. Then you've got 30 miles of lake. Along that lake, there are subdivisions, but there are also other incorporated areas like Brazos Bend, DeCordova, Confrontation, all of these places.
Our friends are regulated.
Yeah, you know, those are.
And those downtown are Water's Edge, Harbor Lakes, very
well.
So are most of those properties in the county?
Most of these are out of the.
Out in the county.
Yeah, and the only way we can.
They're pretty rugged. They're bad. Build a lake and they'll flood.
Yeah.
It's ugly up there. Some of the board went up there in April. A lot of it got washed out here a few weeks ago. It was great. We got more MetLab stuff in the late night. So most of that's in the county. The county.
Yeah, and the regulations for the county are so.
It's we're hoping that.
Very difficult.
Yeah, they don't.
Part of the dichotomy I think you have with the whole issue too, Director Gear, is that the city is not going to come in with those subdivisions that they have and enforce something on them other than what they have right now. I mean, just in, I don't think they will. Much of this is out in the county. From what I've heard, at least talking with county officials, I think most of them could probably care less if there's another canal that goes into the lake. I think that whatever comes out of this study, if we pursue it and move forward with it yet and get the recommendations, at least if you're going to put canals in, here's the way they need to be designed to where you don't have this kind of problem. The city is certainly willing to partner and put that into their regulations in that. But going back to fix things, I'm not so sure any of them are enamored with doing that.
I think the fix of Kent is within the city primarily. Those are fairly well.
The county, right.
But the county commissioner's court probably didn't get a hundred. Take this study and this photograph, maybe go to the commission court sometime at their invitation. Might get some reaction.
Tiffany, is there any correlation between that and the watershed protection plan that y'all are doing? And can you use this for leverage to do that?
That will probably be, I think, a strong correlation between what the Northern Group is doing and what we're doing.
I think on the part of the county, at least as far as the bacteria issue and the septics, we've already seen some great improvements in their local regulations. It won't fix the problem areas, but they are moving forward to at least prevent future situations. They've significantly increased the lot size and almost made it financially unfeasible for a developer to put in some of these communities where you have lot after lot after lot on top of each other. So they are moving in that direction. How much play we'd get on fixing the existing bad ones, I really can't predict until we approach them with a plan.
What if we just sent a letter to the homeowner that says, you are negatively impacting the Brazos River. You've got 30 days to fix your whatever. I mean, they may tell us to go jump off a cliff and that's fine.
Explain the system of whenever the guy was putting the brine in there. I mean, we have no regulatory capability. You got to go to the Hood County Health Department to get anything ticketed.
It goes along with my analogy always to persuade folks to take one outside and shoot them. The rest of them get in line. You block off one canal up there because it is messing up our lake. You block off one canal from excess, and I will guarantee it'll catch your attention. I know it's a drastic solution, but I see another plan we're going to come up with, whatever number of dollars we're going to spend. It's a great idea, but no one has to do it.
One of the things we looked at earlier, to give you an idea, is we talked about package plants and regional waste systems. Everybody says, well, that's fine, we'll build them, and nobody will connect to them because of the cost to connect, so nothing ever happens. You know, when we talk to the county commissioners and to the city fathers, and Chris, you've been in on these discussions. We're building a regional package plant. It's going to cost the homeowner $3,000 or $5,000 to pay for helping put the line out to his house and doing the connect and getting rid of his septic system. And nobody's going to do that. So
it's a matter of reaching back 40 years to try to correct those errors that were made when the lake was first established, by standards, by regulation, regulatory oversight, and it's just outside the city limits is out of control in terms of you see the photograph.
And usually places like those, if they're in the county specifically, the homeowners regulations will cover some of those things. And you mentioned...
But there are very few homeowner associations outside the...
Outside the new subdivisions, there's not any.
Mr. Chairman, I think what we've seen here is we've gotten validation that there's a heck of a problem up there, and it needs to be fixed. And it's not going to be solved in a day or a week. But as we go forward into the next phase, and you gather the data and able to justify your position, your atypical or your apolitical position or anti-political position. If the board's willing to fade the heat and says, okay, we're just not going to do that, come on down, Mr. Mayor, and so forth, or county, we think that you're destroying our lake, and we have the data to prove that. And we're in the process of collecting that data because short of a lawsuit, the only way you're going to get out of it without doing the data and investing the money is get into a lawsuit.
Right. Agreed.
Do we have any liability? I mean, some little kid falls in one of those crevices and dies. Do we have any liability because we don't have certain or didn't enforce or didn't do something? I mean, I know we have governmental immunity, but...
I mean, I don't think we have liability. Does that mean we can't get sued? No. I mean, we can get sued for anything, but I really don't think we have real liability. I think this is more of something that we've engaged in because of the water quality concerns up there.
So it's private property and it's are there any permitting processes where they have to get a permit to build a bulkhead?
Well, what's transpired is at one time the authority was granting permits for the development of canals. Correct? Am I correct, Mike Eltis? Never?
Bulkheads. I think we've done some bulkhead permitting, Mike, haven't you?
Generally speaking, we permit bulkheads.
Generally speaking, we permit bulkheads. It's an on-water facility in accordance with our regulations. Historically, at that lake, that wasn't necessarily the case. There's a lot of bulkheads that just went in.
No. But I guess
not from the county or the city, but through the Brazos River Authority via our regulations. They're required to have a permit before they build it.
Okay, we have liability. In certain
counties. Then there's a distinction between the bulkhead and the canals themselves. Because on the canals themselves, we do not give a permit for that. So I think there's kind of two issues, and I suspect. That's correct. And in that
if it falls below the 693, which is the contour that defines the shoreline of the water, we ostensibly have a requirement to permit it. Right now, we do not have a shoreline management plan or guide that's active at Lake Granbury. We do have the requirements established inside the regulations, none of which adequately address that issue.
So if I want to get a permit and I come to you, what would I have to provide?
We want to see what your design was. We are aware now that there are some things that we need to really watch for. Obviously, wooden structures that have creosote, certain types of creosote in them, have negative impact on the area. We prefer to use riprap as a first choice, and this kind of falls in line with the standards that were established at Possum Kingdom.
So is VRA the only permitting process I would have to go through?
Right now, that's correct. That I'm aware of. I don't want to speak for all the other little municipalities that may be out there, but
well,
the best
we don't have much bite behind our bark in regards to the canal systems that exist that are in the county. But if there's a canal system that's within the city limits that is, does not meet our standards, I think it needs to be part of our policy and part of the program with the city that if they want us to do this, and my understanding is this has been a political push to get us to do something that we voted not to do, and we're spending a bunch of money to figure out how to do it, then the city needs to step up to the plate and partner with us and bring the ones that are within the city limits up to the current standards.
Good luck.
I think our real key is water quality of the lakes, because that really is what we're supposed to be taking care of. And when I see all the green stuff, hopefully what we're gonna end up with are some recommendations for what we can do in the future. And I hope to hear more about what can be done now. Now, who's gonna pay for it? I can't tell you. But if you need to get circulation, then we can set up what would help this situation. We could put those kind of guidelines out there and maybe partner with the city, maybe partner with the county. But I think we ought to base it all on water quality. And we ought to talk about putting aerators in those areas. Who has to do it? We got to work on that, maybe get some grants. But that's, I think, where we need to focus on water quality.
The results of the study and take it forward both to the city and the county government, and perhaps even embarrass them into taking some initiative to do it.
At least there will be something that they can use, because right now there's nothing, apparently. That's a guideline on what to do. If you want a new canal, there are no guidelines. So if we at least have that, that'll be helpful.
Precincts in the county, each commissioner has his own little fever, and they're aware of this, but it just hasn't been presented to them in a coordinated manner to say, hey, this is what it looks like, and this is what's impacting the quality of the lake, the water, the recreation purposes, development, and what have you.
And they ought to have a health issue, too, that they have to be aware of that will make them want to partner with us.
I agree with Carolyn this way. That's green slimy canal that we saw in the photos. No different than that untreated sewage being dumped into one of our tributaries. It is absolutely no different. What do we do about that if we found one of those?
I have a question for you. Why aren't the residents as upset about those pictures and the conditions like we are?
Jackie, get up into the county, and those folks have stayed up there for 40 years. It's pathetic. It's quite pathetic. Pitt County is one of the poorest counties in the state until a few years ago, and now it's upscale, but it's all in the city. It's not in the county. The county is pretty darn pathetic.
Okay. Because until they start making it a political issue for the commissioners, nothing's going to happen.
And that little commissioner's court, without being too critical, Billy's been there. It's also pretty bad. It's so entwined in Old Granbury, we call it. Generations in those commissioners' court positions. Been there forever. A grandson of a commissioner is in there, and the court now just got elected. So there's just not a lot of improvement. I think Carolyn said, if we get on the water issue, water quality issue, and things of that nature, and take the results of the study back, photographs, what have you, wake them up a little bit, maybe, if not embarrass them. But then comes who's going to provide the money.
I think the way to initiate that change and get it going is that we're going to have to take a leadership role, step forward, spend the money, get the evidence down. You know, if it's got to get to Austin, it's going to get to Austin. Somehow, as you say, wake people up and get their attention about this thing. If they want economic prosperity up there, they're going to have to bring in all their neighbors.
Part of the problem is, Chris, I don't know whether you've backed me up on this or not, but part of the problem is that there is a large part of the influential people in the county that do not want any economic progress. And that's part of the battle that's going on right now. There is a very large part of the power base that wants to keep the entire county in 1880.
What's the population?
I said 1880, not 1980.
Well, what's the population of the county?
Of the county, probably 45,000.
45,000.
Population of Granbury, 3,000.
I think we need to either read the resolution and vote on it, or get on with this thing. We can talk this thing to death.
Okay. Okay, why don't you bring it on up then? I won't go through the next one. Okay? The following resolution is presented for consideration of the Board of Directors of the Brazos River Authority for adoption at its July 30th, 2007 meeting. Be it resolved that the Board of Directors of the Brazos River Authority hereby authorizes General Manager, CEO, to initiate Phase 2 of the Brown & Gay Engineers, Inc. Contract for the Lake Granbury Canal Engineering Study for an amount not to exceed $150,434.
Moved by Karen, second by Mr. Bloom. Hold the board, please.
Chairman Pena?
Yes.
Director Bellion?
Yes.
Director Ellison?
Yes.
Director Adams?
Yes.
Director Blum?
Yes.
Director Butler?
Yes.
Director Carrabba?
Yes.
Director Chalmette?
Yes.
Director Christian?
Yes.
Director Garcia?
Yes.
Director Gear?
Yes.
Director Hughes?
Yes.
Director Johnson?
Yes.
Director Kilgore?
Yes.
Director Moore?
Yes.
Director Skaggs?
Yes. Thank you.